their leg pains with wry faces. Though Buddhism originated in India, then Buddhism was founded in China by Bodhidharma around the 6th century. Since then, it has spread and developed itself throughout China, Korea, and Japan. So Zen is a unique form of Oriental religion. However, Zen has a universal character which is applicable to Westerner as well as Easterner, regardless of historical settings, past, present, and even future. This is because, unlike other religions, Zen has no dogma or no creed, which one must believe in order to follow its way. Nor does Zen rely on any scripture or rituals, such as the Bible or Eucharist. What is needed for Zen is simply this body and mind. This body and your everyday mind. And through them, to confront the most fundamental problems of human existence with a firm resolution to overcome them. In this sense, Zen speaks directly to the issue facing contemporary humanity, or modern humanity. One of these serious issues is that of alienation or estrangement. In our modern society, people often speak of estrangement from the family or alienation from society and nature and so on. It is important for us to learn how to overcome such estrangement or alienation and to restore with unity with family, society, and the nature. However, I do not think that these various estrangements can be completely overcome without overcoming that more fundamental form of estrangement, that is estrangement from self, the self-estrangement. It is this problem of self-estrangement that lies behind these other problems of estrangement from family, society, and nature. A particular form of family estrangement or society estrangement and nature estrangement may be overcome one by one. But new forms of family estrangement, society estrangement, and nature estrangement could continue to occur. They may even occur endlessly unless the problem of self-estrangement is itself overcome. Unlike the plants and the animals, we human beings have self-consciousness. Because we are self-conscious, we look at ourselves from outside through comparison with others. Why is he so intelligent? Why am I not so gifted? Why is she so beautiful? Why am I not so beautiful? Some feel superior to others, while some feel inferior. Although we are self, we are not really self, because it is from the outside that we look at ourselves. In our daily life, there are moments when we are here with ourselves, the moment in which we feel a vague unity, a vague sense of unity. But at other moments, we find ourselves not here, but there, looking at ourselves from outside. We fluctuated between here and there, from moment to moment. We are constantly moving between the inside and outside. Homeless, without any place to settle. Within ourselves, there is a gap. We are thus separated from ourselves. Today's problems of the estrangement from family, estrangement from society, or from nature, may have characteristics peculiar to the late 20th century. Those problems in the United States may be different in character from their counterparts in Japan. However, the basic structure of self-estrangement as a root source of the problems of family estrangement, society estrangement, and nature estrangement is not essentially different between the 10th century and the 20th century, between Japanese and American. This is because separation from ourselves, separation from oneself through one's self-consciousness is a fundamental problem innate in human existence. Accordingly, the question of the self, that is, who am I? What is my true self? Is a basic question raised incessantly throughout human history in both the East and West. It is this problem of true self with which then is primarily concerned. A little while ago, I said that what is essential for Zen is with this body and mind to realize the most fundamental problem innate in human existence. By that, I indicated this problem of true self. Then is a religion. The fundamental problem of Zen, however, is not what is God, but what is self. And the aim of Zen is not faith in God, but awakening to the true self. The D.T. Suzuki, my teacher, often talks about the suchness, or as it isness. Plants and animals are living in their suchness. A pine tree is a pine tree. A bamboo is a bamboo. A pine tree has no sense of superiority over bamboo. Bamboo has no sense of inferiority to a pine tree. A dog is a dog. A cat is a cat. A dog has no sense of superiority over a cat. A cat has no sense of inferiority to a dog. We human beings may think that even plants and animals entertain such a thought. But this is merely a projection of human capacities onto the non-human dimension. In fact, plants and animals do not have such a mode of consciousness. They just live naturally without any sense of evaluation or judgment. They are free from the problem of self-estrangement. They are living in their suchness, as it is-ness. But we human beings are separated from our suchness. We are never just as we are. As I said, we are self, and yet we are not really self. We are separated from ourselves. There is always a gap inside of ourself. So far as we are moving between here and there, between the inside and outside, looking at ourselves in comparison with others, and looking at ourselves from the outside, we are always restless. And this restlessness or anxiety is not accidental to man, that is peculiar to some individuals and not others. It is not that some have this inner restlessness while others do not. Insofar as one is a human being, one cannot escape this basic anxiety. In fact, strictly speaking, it is not that one has this anxiety, but rather one is this anxiety. How can we overcome this fundamental restlessness and return to the original, suchness? To do so, is a raison d'etre and essential task of a religion. According to Genesis, whenever God created something, he saw that it was good. When God created Adam and Eve, he blessed them and saw that they were good. Don't you think that the term good in this context is meant in the merely ethical sense? My answer would be no. When God saw that his creation was good, he was not referring to the merely ethical dimension. Rather, he was indicating that all of creation is ontologically good, or to use D.T. Suzuki's term, that all of creation is in suchness. God created a tree just as a tree, and saw that it was good. It is in suchness as a tree. He created a bird. A bird is really a bird, not a fish. When he created a fish, it is really a fish, very different from a bird. Everything in its own suchness. When he created Adam and Eve, just like the plants and animals, and so forth, Adam is really Adam, and Eve is really Eve. Adam is good, Eve is good. They are just as they are, respectively and equally. They thus symbolize the original nature of man. But according to Genesis, Adam and Eve ate the apple of knowledge. The apple of knowledge, our apple of knowing good and evil. Does this indicate good and evil only in the ethical sense? The story, in my opinion, illustrate far more than that. The eating of the apple suggests the making of value judgment. You may say, for instance, today we have a good weather, although yesterday we had a bad weather. Or you may say, this is a good road, whereas that is a very bad road. So here, the terms good and evil can be made to apply to the weather or the road conditions, etc. It is in this broader sense of knowing good and evil that the apple of knowledge symbolizes the ability of making value judgment. The ability to make value judgment is the unique ability or a unique attribute of self-consciousness. With the self-consciousness, one can judge this is good or that is bad. In this way, we make a distinction between this and that. We love this and hate that. We pursue this and avoid that. Through this capacity for making distinction, people come to be involved in attachment. The love is a positive form of attachment, and hate is a negative form of attachment. By making a distinction, we come to like something and dislike others. And in this way, we become attached to something and reject others. The rejection being the negative form of attachment. We are involved and confined by our attachment. This is a result of having self-consciousness. Through self-consciousness, we also make a distinction between ourselves and others. As a consequence of this distinction, we attach the self, making ourselves the center of the world. We become involved in and limited by the distinction between self and other. The duality between love and hate, and so forth. The distinction turns into conflict, or opposition, and struggle. So long as the distinction becomes an object of attachment. But this is not the state of man's original nature. As God saw, Adam is good and Eve is good. Just as plants and animals in their original nature are all good. Fundamentally, everything in the order of original creation is good. Thus the question is, how can we return to that original goodness, our original suchness? I think Christianity has its own answer to this question. In Christianity, self-consciousness, as a result of eating the fruit of knowledge, is regarded as sin, S-I-N, sin. Because eating the apple constitutes rebellion against the word of God. God said, thou shalt not eat that apple, that fruit. It is through the reunion of man and God by virtue of Jesus Christ's redemptive love that man can return to his original suchness. In Buddhism, self-consciousness is regarded as ignorance, because in self-consciousness we lose the reality of suchness. and are limited by our outsider view of things in the universe. As such, we view even ourselves from the outside. This outsider view of ourselves comprises fundamental ignorance inherent in human existence. Trying to grasp ourselves, oneself, by oneself, from the outside may be compared to the metaphor of a snake swallowing its own tail. Try to swallow or bite its own tail, it makes a circle. And the more it tries to swallow its tail, the smaller that circle becomes. And when the snake makes carries this effort to swallow its own tail to its final conclusion, the circle turns into a small dot, and finally it must disappear into emptiness. The more concretely, the snake must die through this effort. As long as the human self tries to grasp itself through self-consciousness, the human ego self falls into an ever-deepening dilemma. And at the extreme point of this dilemma, the ego can no longer support itself and must collapse into emptiness. When the attempt of self-consciousness to grasp itself is presented, when the attempt of self-consciousness to grasp itself is pressed to its ultimate conclusion, the human ego must die. Through the death of ego self, no self is realized. The realization of no self is a necessity for the human ego. Someone may realize the necessity of confronting this dilemma only on his deathbed. But others may existentially intuit the need for resolving this dilemma, even while quite young, and thus embark on the religious quest. In any event, the realization of no self is a must for the human ego. We must realize that there is no unchanging eternal ego self. It is essential that one faces this dilemma and breaks through in order to realize suchness. This realization of suchness is a liberation from the dilemma which is existentially rooted in human existence, human consciousness. In this realization, you are no longer separated from yourself, but are just yourself. And no more, no less. There is no gap between you and yourself. You become you. You are now free from self-estrangement. The realization of no self is not something negative, but is nothing but the realization of true self. True self is realized only through the realization of no self. So the loss of your ego self is a gain of your true self. When you realize your own true self or your own true suchness, you realize the suchness of everything at once. When you realize your own suchness, apparently appears in its suchness, bamboo manifests in its suchness. Dogs and cats appear in their suchness as well. A dog is really a dog, no more nor less. A cat is really a cat, no more nor less. Everything is realized in its distinctiveness. Zen is a way to directly point out this suchness and make you awaken to your true self. The Joshu are one of outstanding Zen master in Tang Dynasty. Once asked a new monk, "Have you ever been here before?" The monk answered, "Yes, sir, I have." Thereupon, the master said, "Have a cup of tea." Later on, another monk came, and the master asked him the same question, "Have you ever been here?" This time, the answer was quite opposite. "I have never been here, sir." The old master, however, answered just as before, "Have a cup of tea." Afterwards, the Inji, that is the managing monk of the monastery, asked the master, "How is it that make the same offering of a cup of tea, no matter what a monk reply is?" The old master called out, "Oh, Inji," who at once replied, "Yes, master." Whereupon Joshu said, "Have a cup of tea." Sekkyo, another Chinese Zen master, asked one of his accomplished monk, "Can you take hold of empty sky or empty space?" "Yes, sir," he replied. "Show me how you do it." The monk stretched out his arm and clutched at empty space. Sekkyo said, "Is that the way?" "But after all, you have not got anything." "What then," asked the monk, "is your way?" The master straightway took hold of the monk's nose and gave it a hard pull, which makes the latter exclaim, Oh, how hard you pull at my nose. You are hurting me terribly." That is a way to have good hold of empty space, said the master. In these dialogues, do we only see trivial talks about ordinary things of life and nature? Is there nothing spiritual or religious to, or is there nothing conducive to the enlightenment of the religious life? Or it depends on how you look at it. In these ways, Zen masters take any opportunity in daily life to directly point out man's mind in order to awaken one's, in order to make him or her awaken to his or her original nature. Dr. Shinichi Hisamatsu, another teacher of mine, was a visiting professor of Zen Buddhism at the Divinity School of Harvard University in 1957, I think. Whenever he greeted the people, while shaking hand, he used to say, "How do you do?" or "How are you?" "How do you do?" or "How are you?" Most common daily greeting, which many people uttered almost without any special meaning. But my teacher Hisamatsu say this in this way, "How do you do?" or "How are you?" Then this is most common, almost meaningless greeting turn into a very profound existential question. What is your way of being? How are you? How do you do in your life? There is no special doctrine. But even in such a daily greeting, he raised a very profound existential question to the people who met, and tried to them to awaken to the basic question innate in human and being. In the Binti Guru, one of the most well-known Zen literature, there is a story about Enyadatta. I like this story very much, so I often quote this story in my talk. Being a very handsome young man, Enyadatta would look in a mirror every morning and smile at his image. He was so handsome. He was so handsome that he would look at a mirror and smile to his image reflected in the mirror. One morning, for some reason, his face was not reflected by the mirror. In surprise, he thought his head was lost. Thrown into consternation, he searched about everywhere for it, but with no success. Finally, he came to realize that the head for which he was searching was nothing else but that which was doing the searching. The fact was that, being a careless fellow, he had looked at the backside rear of the mirror. He was so careless that at that morning he looked at the backside of the mirror. So, naturally his head didn't reflect. But since his head has never been lost, nevertheless he looked for his head. Where is my head? Where is my head? Therefore, the more he searched for his head outside of his of himself, the more thwarted he was. The point of this story is that which is thought is simply that which is seeking. Any adapter had searched for his head with his head. Our real head, however, is by no means something to be sought for in front of us, but is something which is always here for me, here and now. We cannot see our head, objectively. Of course, you may see your head when you cut your head. Then you can you? When you cut your head and hold it as an object, then you can see. You cannot see, because you already died, So far as your head is a living head, you can never see it as something objective. Being at the center of one's searching, it can never be objectified. We often ask ourselves, what am I? And we are used to searching for answer somewhere outside of ourselves. However, the answer, the question, what am I, lies in the question itself. The answer to the question can only be found in the here and now, where I am and which I am fundamentally. The Song of Zazen by Haku Yin, an outstanding then master of the middle Tokugawa era of Japan, well expressed this point. Sentient beings are really Buddha. Like water and ice, apart from water, no ice. Outside of sentient beings, no Buddha. Not knowing it is near, they seek for it afar. Just like being in water, but crying for thirst. Taking as form the formless form, going or coming, you are always there. Taking as salt, the saltless salt, singing and dancing are Dharma's voice. How vast the boundless sky of samadhi, the meditation. How bright the moon of fourfold wisdom. What now is there to seek? Is Nirvana revealed to you? This very place is the lotus ground. This very body is Buddha. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor Abe. We're